Right, good morning, everybody. Today is Wednesday, October 19th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Wednesday, everyone. It is 61 degrees and partly sunny here in upstate New York. Actually feels like it's going to be a beautiful fall day. So where did we leave off on Monday? We titled the show NASA DOD Space Weather Executive Order and Google Truth Algorithm. And you know, there's a lot of things that are going on right now all at the same time that don't necessarily seem like they are related. But I really think that these orchestrations that are happening to pull the bag closed on us is an orchestrated, coordinated effort. We have everyone and their brother now in the space race and all kinds of NASA help, aid, assistance, spaceports open for renting, billionaires dumping bazillions of dollars, investors, rocket ship companies, all these new satellites utilizing new technologies to go into space, and then whoop! As we're in the middle of getting ready to launch World War III, we announce that we have a space weather executive order, and we're going to make it our top priority to make sure that asteroids don't come down here and give us the kill shot, create some sort of environment where they can monitor, bag, and tag space weather 24/7 and take a look at what's going on in the sun and whether or not our magnetosphere is having issues or fluctuations, if it's shields up or shields down. Talked about some stuff that related to the magnetosphere. And interestingly enough, in regards to space, we had CERN. Who is working on developing a magnetosphere, an artificial magnetosphere, to potentially be the first radiation shield to protect the future of our species, that potentially be opening a new chapter in human life and planning on going to Mars to make us a multiplanetary species. Now, guys, we spent 2 weeks on space. And it went pretty deep, and there were a lot of really strange things as we were digging around at who's connected to who and how it's all connected. But CERN, and don't let me forget this one, I received over the last 2 or 3 days probably 10 or 12 messages about the last few shows and some interesting connecting points, I guess I would call them, that other people have made. They were somewhat similar to some of the postulations we were drawing on this show. So I have some catching up to do. This has been pretty overwhelming, and I've had 2 major browser crashes over the last 5 days or so. So I lost all those tabs I had up for the shows and whatever. Everything, you know, I get them lined up, and as I'm working at night researching, I just drag them and put them into place with the other tabs I already had lined up. So there's a progression when I do the show. I could just bing, 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 and there's all the topics. But if I have a devastating crash and then, you know, where Google decides it's got to update me, whoops, you have too much important information open. It's time for your upgrade, Johnny. Go back to ground zero. You don't have to remember. It'll be all better. But once they do that to me, it takes a lot, and usually I end up building a new show. So anyway, I am going to get back to that. I'm going to dig into some of these things that have been sent to me about space and about CERN and about being able to actually control our own magnetosphere. And it's interesting because I was talking about how our magnetosphere is waning. And scientists have been talking about that for a while. You know, we were looking at that back in 2011. And we were looking at some of the correlations between space weather and weather on Earth. Makes a lot of sense because of the high energy particulates that can get into the upper atmosphere. That was all research that was done at the Manhattan Project. I think I mentioned that with Kurt Vonnegut's brother. I don't remember his first name. But also, You know, they've been warning about this Carrington event for a very long time. And just think about how devastating a Carrington event would be to our technologically obsessed world. You know, and as the days go on, we depend more and more on technology as the Internet of Everything is rolling out. Remember, Internet of Things becomes eventually the Internet of Everything. Some of these little CubeSat 5G terahertz millimeter wave, whatever they're using on them. I mean, there's all kinds of different things they're using on these little mini CubeSats. But these CubeSats are going to be utilized not only by Stephen Hawking to go to Alpha Centauri and go explore for life and habitable planets, but also by universities, Air Force. The Air Force wants to plasma bomb the sky. Federal government, Google, for the connectivity project. They are looking at connecting every single organism, device, system to this Internet of Everything. Now, they get DARPA working on, of course, 21st century security for this Internet of Everything. We also found out that they are now teaching autonomous systems. We read this last week. To start reasoning. This is artificial intelligence on steroids. This is like teaching a child to grow up and become something that it wasn't initially. Way, way, way back, we first started looking at robotics. There was an extremely disturbing story that had come out in regards to robots evolving. You know, we've talked about that law of exponential returns many times, how technology up until this point has been moving still rather briskly, but not as fast as it could be moving. You know, man is imperfect. Man is slow, puny human brains. So it takes us a while to figure things out, but and this experiment, and I think it was an MIT or Stanford experiment, I'm pretty sure it was MIT, they had robots building the next generation of robots. So in essence, you had a mama robot and you had baby robots. And what they discovered in their experiments is that the parent robot built in its best traits to the offspring and tended to avoid building in traits that were subpar. Well, by any definition of the name, that is titled evolution. But this is intelligent evolution. This isn't even by chance. This isn't by nature. This is by logical deduction. The mother robot is able to build the best features into this new creature. What's going to happen eventually? As we are spinning out cloud learning, you know, we had read about Baxter quite a number of times out of MIT Technology Review. Well, now Google is also working on a robot that utilizes cloud learning. And guys, this is where the danger starts coming in. Because very quickly, we went from some dumb Atlas robot that they showed in the Cyber Grand Challenge. Actually, that was the hacking one with the autonomous software. The autonomous robots, it was the DARPA Robotic Challenge. Now, of course, you have Gil Pratt, who is the head of DARPA Robotic Challenge, who has now gone over to head Toshiba's brand new billion-dollar artificial intelligence center in Northern California. They opened up a satellite office in Michigan with the University of Michigan as well. And they're going to focus a lot on self-driving cars as well as factory automation. And we also found out there are lots of other robotic producers that are working to produce robots en masse, especially for industrialization and industrialized capabilities in factories, one of which being out of South Korea. That's where you have Samsung. There were over 60,000 jobs, we've mentioned this before, just replaced recently in a Foxconn factory in China making components for Apple iPhones. 60,000 employees replaced in China that were probably only making a few dollars on an hour. Those were all the farmers that left the fields to come into the cities to get the good jobs that made the money. The Chinese were gypped because with the law of exponential returns, unlike us where we had a good 30, 40 years, I don't know, give or take, 70s, 80s, they did start putting some robots into manufacturing, but they weren't the types of robots we have today. They were more like stamping or basics. I mean, they couldn't really think. They were big and clunky. You had to program in them, and they were to do one skill. Well, these new robots, these new ones that have cloud thinking capabilities, and eventually they'll also be able to reason, as we have DARPA and many of the other military industrial complex working on reasoning autonomous beings, things, warfighters. Google, gotta love it. Google jumps on the bandwagon now. Google wants robots to acquire new skills by learning from each other. Guys, this is the rise of the machine. Okay, and this goes hand in hand with a lot of this space stuff that's going on. We're landing a rover today onto Mars. Russia and European Space Agency, kept saying UK, but it's the ESA, are supposed to land today. It was going to be originally during this show, but I saw yesterday they updated the time. It looks like it's going to be more later afternoon now, like 3 or 4 o'clock Eastern. So we'll have to check on that. I'm sure if you look at Russia, Mars landing, there'll be news out there. Anyway, Google wants robots to acquire new skills by learning from each other. Now, this is going to be important when we go to other planets and we head off to the moon to go mine and do things like that. Go exploit more of the solar system. As we start weaponizing space more and more, the brink of World War III, we need to have autonomous thinking, reasoning capabilities on machines so we don't have to have somebody 24/7 monitoring this stuff. Oh no, it's going to be the Internet of Everything grid that's monitoring all this stuff, and they're going to have software that will be able to determine whether or not all is operating within parameters. This will be all of our border security. And I'm not just talking border like a wall. I'm talking like border around the planet, border around your neighborhood. Remember, we're going to have all these autonomous drones taking off. There already are some that are also going to be artificially intelligent. I saw yesterday, you know, after all those plane crashes we had, remember we had plane crash after plane crash after plane disappearance. Oh, plane crash. Oh, we had a jihadi as a co-pilot that drove us into a mountainside. There were a lot of those, and I had already postulated as I was following those storylines that, oh, we're going to have some way potentially to control flying planes, helicopters, drones, which we already see, in an autonomous fashion with an autopilot that may be able to determine whether or not you are within parameters. And if not, oh, Johnny, look out, because Robo Copilot is going to take over. Well, they were running a bunch of tests here over the last few weeks, and this thing works pretty well. They're pretty happy with this new artificially intelligent co-pilot on aircraft. You know, the same thing in these self-driving cars. We've been looking at some of the ethics of whether or not, if you're about ready to have an accident, if that self-driving car should be taking over and making the decision that it is better to kill less people in an accident, and since you are the only one in the car, it's going to veer you into the brick wall before it allows you to try to save yourself by driving onto the sidewalk. Cars will be making that decision for us as well. And if we get even further down the rabbit hole and start looking at some of this new 21st century cures, of course, all this stuff has been rolled out of the White House here over this last year. Precision medicine, autonomous AI, self-driving cars. We've had all kinds of industry lobbyists up in Washington trying to get some rules and regulations down so that they can start rolling these out. And don't worry about some of these issues that we're having with AI making decisions that maybe weren't up on par, driving underneath a semi because it didn't quite see the semi was stopped in the road. And because we'll get those kinks all worked out, just keep buying it. Keep paying attention. But guys, this is all happening. And so they're even getting to the mad science division now. Little programmable, somewhat intelligent bacteria, microbes that are going to be utilized in our body to produce drugs real time when the bacteria or synthetic microbes, whatever they're going to make them out of, I mean, there's so many of them now, determines that your body is not operating within parameters. Back during the self-driving car, there was another thing. They were looking at road rage. When you're road raging, you can't drive properly. So we are going to put some sort of facial recognition cameras inside that car. And the second that we see you start to furrow your brow, you start to fling off colorful expletives, I cannot do that, Dave. And the car will take over for you. It is absolutely a not too distant future for all of us. Well, now we have this robots learning from each other. Like I said, we read about it in MIT Technology Review with Baxter Robot way back when. Baxter was an industrial robot that they'd been messing with, and they discovered that when Baxter learned, Baxter could upload what he learned, and any other Baxters out there connected to the Baxter network, soon to be the Internet of Everything, we're able to draw from that learning and learn new skills in a matter of hours. So unlike the automation of factories in the past, where it required a very large hulking robot that was usually stationary, anchored, and typically a lot of the newer ones that you're seeing, smart industrial robots are just like arms, robotic arms that can twist, turn, do all kinds of things, but there are some that actually move. I think Baxter actually was mobile. But as you're seeing now, they're smaller and more nimble, quickly programmable, and are tapping into artificial intelligence. And very soon, very, very soon, we'll be able to reason. But in the meantime, we have cloud learning. And cloud learning is pretty interesting. Robots of the world, unite! Or not. Google has a plan to speed up robotic learning. Like, we really needed that. And it involves getting robots to share their experiences and collectively improve their capabilities. What, are they going to make like a social network for robots? Sergey Levine from the Google Brain team, along with collaborators from Alphabet subsidiary DeepMind and X, published a blog post on Monday this was 2 weeks ago, published a blog post on Monday describing an approach for, quote, general purpose skill learning across multiple robots, unquote. Teaching robots how to do even the most basic tasks in real world settings like homes or offices has vexed roboticists for decades. So to tackle this challenge, Google researchers decided to combine two recent technology advances. And remember, we are at this cusp where there are so many disruptive technologies just sitting on that horizon for them to pick like poison apples and mix and match them and then release their fury upon the world. Guys, this is beyond frightening. So don't worry about all the other crazy stuff we talked about. Now we got robots who can share learning. And they're going to teach them to reason. They're not going to take all the jobs. No. To tackle this challenge, a Google researcher decided to combine two recent technology advances. The first is cloud robotics, a concept that envisions robots sharing data and skills with each other through an online repository. The other is machine learning, and in particular, an application of the deep neural networks to let robots learn for themselves. Now, a lot of the DeepMind project and these neural networks that Google's been working on has been the project of none other than good old Ray Kurzweil. He's been very involved in that. Ray Kurzweil said he had almost an unlimited budget. We know, of course, Google has lots of connecting dots and lines to not only DARPA, but also they have weaseled their way in or been sucked into the machine and the federal government come on as advisors. We've had rotating employment between the two. We've had rotating employment between DARPA and Google. We found out DARPA Dan also went over to Google, and he is working on some of this Memex technology to be able to map all the dark web and, of course, save children from online predators and protect granny's checkbook. But you know that isn't what it is about. It is about mapping every node on this network we call the internet. The internet is in the process of being upgraded from 1.0 to 2.0. In the old days of 1.0, we had IPv4, so there were only so many addresses out there. And then they freaked out. We talked about this. Said, oh my God, we don't have enough IP addresses to get everything on the planet to a cellular level on this network. And so they had to upgrade to IPv6. Well, IPv6, which is now pretty prevalent, and I think most routers that allow every single one of us to connect to the internet pretty much are equipped now with this new numbering scheme that gives them an exponential increase in addresses to allow bazillions of more objects to be connected and potentially surveilled, controlled. And that is where they are calling it the Internet of Things, that then Cisco's term back even from the early 2000s has now been adopted. They're now calling it the Internet of Everything. That doesn't just include your smart appliances, your smart refrigerator telling you that you're out of milk, or your smart your smart washing machine telling you that your clothes are done. No, this is going to include those little systems that they have also built into cellular organisms as therapeutics. They call them living therapeutics, to then put inside of you. This would be the new 21st century therapies. And those little therapeutics and the little nanobot doctors, I mean, Google's life sciences had already been talking about building that way back. But they'll be able to monitor your vital signs just like a car, and determine whether or not something is out of whack. Guys, this is all about, of course, keeping you safe, keeping you healthy, keeping costs down, making us more efficient, protecting our borders, keeping us safe from extraordinary external space events. But every step forward that we make is every step forward that we are making getting literally sucked into this matrix. And, you know, I saw the Matrix many times, and I didn't really, at the time, I mean, the movie was from so long ago. I was still in the Matrix. I was working in technology. I kind of got it, but I didn't. I hadn't dug deep enough yet. Now, when I think back to that movie, and I think back to some of the things that they had talked about, and, you know, I lost so many stories here. I need to go through at some point and see. I mean, there are a lot of scientists now that are even discussing the fact that we could potentially be part of a holographic simulation. Like, reality itself might not actually even be real. That we might just be players in some sort of highly advanced digital fantasy. I don't know. And, you know, as physicists started looking at this, there was one, I don't remember his name, but it was a pretty famous talk. They all sat down on a stage and had some discussions about this. And scientists that have been really digging into a lot of this research had said that when he dug into actually some of the equations, some of the literal equations that make up some of our basic laws of physics for space, he discovered error correcting code, just like error correcting code that we use when we write an application, very, very prominently in these equations. And he's like, how is this even possible? How is this possible that we have error correcting code in some of the natural mathematics that make up the universe? And there are now two tech billionaires. And I don't know, Facebook has started now hiding posts, it seems. I noticed that last night on one of my friends' pages. I don't know. This is too hard to search for stuff if I don't have it, but there were tech billionaires. I'm trying to see, because this was just a week or so ago. I mean, I even see back to 2014, they were already postulating we could potentially live in some sort of holographic universe. But I might have to find it tomorrow. And there are two billionaires that are paying some scientists now to seriously determine whether or not we are living in some sort of holographic universe. And guys, we're not that too far outside of that realm now from our technological innovation to be able to create worlds where we will no longer be able to determine what is real and what is not. And back already a year, maybe even 2 years ago, we had looked at how we had crossed that threshold with virtual reality, where our processing power is so powerful right now, and just about anything that you can buy on the cheap has enough processing power to do, you know, the majority of things that anybody wants to do, unlike the old days where you'd have to scrimp and scrape and buy the top of the line. If you wanted to get something even capable of running like a 3D video game that was still very rudimentary as far as being able to tell the difference between reality and fantasy. But 3D graphics and rendering has gotten to the point now where it's very difficult to tell. And I mean, sometimes my eye can look at things and maybe the coloring's a little off or whatever, and you can sometimes see some signs. But, you know, as they move forward, and I saw recently they had announced that light can now exist as a particle and a wave, and then they came out announcing that now we have touchable holograms. You know, we talked last week a little bit about CERN and about that blue spiral that appeared the day Obama was going to accept his peace prize. That blue spiral appeared over Norway. And, you know, they said it was a Russian rocket that was spinning out of control. But like I said then, take a look at it. There was no rocket spinning out of control. Those were perfect concentric circles. They came from some sort of ground-based source. CERN was firing up at the time. We've read a lot about Project Bluebeam, them being able to project very realistic holographic images utilizing the sky as their movie screen. You know, but now, with some of this 5G and Internet of Everything, we found out one of the things that they are looking at doing, because it's going to be able to give us a terabit a second Internet beam down from space, that we'll be able to have live streaming, immersive, 24/7 HD virtual reality. Now let's back up and think about Zuckerberg. Remember that picture of Zuckerberg at that tech conference? Oh, maybe 6-8 months ago, walking down the aisle, and there's a whole theater of technical professionals wearing these VR goggles, all looking like drooling idiots as they're staring into these things with their mouths open. And Zuckerberg's walking down the aisle and nobody even notices him. And we found out Regina Duggan from DARPA, who then went to Google, has now gone over to Facebook. She's been working on these quote-unquote moonshot projects for all of them from the very beginning, all the way from swallowing tokens to give you human superpowers to be able to open doors and authenticate to things ubiquitously, to wearable computing, reusable components and communication devices. And now she's over on the Space Internet Project for Facebook. Facebook is in on this as well. And every single one of these tech companies that's been getting involved has tied themselves tightly to not only the feds and robotics and artificial intelligence, because they're all on board, but somehow also to space, satellites, drones, and ubiquitous internet. It is one big scary picture that is all coming together, and we have this technocracy that is forming. This entire control grid in the sky that'll be able to bag, tag, manipulate, control autonomously, utilizing artificial reason in the future, and there will be no way to fight back. Anyway, back to this deep neural network learning and Google's new toe in the water. In a series of experiments carried out by researchers, individual robotic arms attempted to perform a given task repeatedly, and not surprisingly, each robot was able to improve its own skills over time. They learn, guys. Learning to adapt to slight variations in the environment and its own motions. But Google didn't stop there. Of course they didn't. They got the robots to pool their experiences, like swarm learning, to, quote, build a common model of the skill, unquote, that, as researchers explained, was better and faster than what they could have ever achieved on their own. Guys, anyone who's ever watched Star Trek and the Borg, this literally is what is being created right now. Take that a few steps further and figure out, what do you think's going to happen with all of this synthetic biology being able to create artificial skin and brain implants that allow you to get actual touch and feel from touching a wall, putting IBM's Watson, that's their AI project, deep learning project, into curing cancer. Watson's been over at Sloan Memorial Kettering Institute in Cleveland working for a long time now to help them come up with cures and stuff that other doctors missed. And good old Charlie Rose, CFR Charlie Rose from CBS. I mean, I like Charlie. He's interviewed anyone who was anyone. Go out to his website, charlierose.com. It's pretty amazing, the interviews that he's had. But Charlie Rose is a gatekeeper of information. You can watch him sometimes on the morning show. Big Mind pulls clips from that channel. And I pay a lot of attention to Charlie because he's got two or three sidekicks on that morning show. And Nora's one of them. You know, she's a little bubbly, younger. I'd say Nora's probably in her 40s. Charlie's probably close to retirement. But Nora, you know, she'll go off and be talking about something and asking questions or whatever. But Nora gets corrected if Nora says something out of line by Charlie. Well, Charlie, for some reason this last week, was hosting 60 Minutes and usually doesn't. He was like a special host for that day. 60 Minutes put out a special segment that they titled Artificial Intelligence, Positioned to be a Game Changer. Now remember, they do that a lot when they are trying to roll new things out to resistant consumers like you and me. You know, can't teach old dogs new tricks. This 21st century technology is for the birds. You know, remember when we were kids? We had like the first video game or VCR or whatever, cable first rolled out. We got rid of our old antennas. We got refrigerators back in the generation before, too. You know, motor vehicles, oh, this is true. Every technological innovation causes disruption. And also, it's what makes you get old, right? That older generation is very skeptical of this new technology. Well, I don't know. I really don't think that being skeptical of a car over a horse or a refrigerator over root cellaring really was warranted back at the time. But I can tell you, they are using those same arguments now on us to say that we're overreacting. The robots aren't going to take all your jobs. There is not a control matrix that is being dropped down upon of you. No. There are not little robot doctors that'll be able to go inside of you and develop drugs autonomously to tamp down on whatever ails you without your knowledge even. I mean, literally, they are working on that. This is off the hook. Trying to merge us with this new technology. This isn't about utilizing technology anymore. This is about augmenting humanity with robotics. And they're going to promise us longevity, right? We've talked a lot about, again, tech billionaires, all the tech titans investing in longevity medicine. A lot of the big boys, Google's Verily, like I said, 23andMe. Get your DNA in the database, and we'll be able to tell you what's wrong and how we can fix you and make you perfect. They are preying upon the hubris and the egocentrism that this instant gratification society that we've developed for ourselves has fostered. Our children have been sucked into the machine with that dopamine button. And the majority of civilization today that is online would find it very, very, very difficult if tomorrow there were a Carrington event and all the internet and all the electronic devices went goodbye. They would start having withdrawal symptoms. If anyone's ever seen a child who has a computer problem get taken away from the computer. We read a few stories. There were like three stories. One an adult, one a teen, and one a young child that all ended up having some serious mental issues because of this addiction. Well, guys, they're setting us up for full dangling carrot control. And they've primed our brains to want to accept this technology to make us better, to make us more resilient, to make us smarter, to make us live forever, to make us capable of becoming an interplanetary species. And eventually, these people right now, and there's a large majority of the planet, and as more and more come online, there's going to be even more and more that are ready to accept the machine. Don't think it's a secret that they are looking to internet-enable continents such as Africa. Like I asked in the very beginning when Google and Facebook both came out with their plans to internet-enable Africa, give them all cell phones. Use these 24/7 drones to beam internet down to those poor African villagers who need to get a recipe for making juju juice. What would they need with the internet in Africa? Well, what they need with the internet in Africa is to make sure that we are all compromised, right? We need to show them the wonders of the 21st century and get them to want that dangling carrot, to accept being sucked into the machine. And someday, they've talked about this quite often, the end result is going to be to be able to upload ourselves into the same cloud where we are having these robots teach each other and create swarm learning. We're going to have an artificial, for lack of a better expression, an artificial heaven. You'll be able to live forever. You'll be able to be downloaded at Christmas time. You'll be able to have a push button and someone play your life story as you are beamed down as a VR 3D touchable hologram to have conversations, because they will have not only uploaded your brain patterns and your memories and your experiences that people will be able to scan through, be like the internet of learning, but you will also be able, through your patterns, they'll be able to anticipate what your reaction to a certain scenario would be. So it'll be on the fly. Guys, this is swarm to infinity. This is trapping us. I don't know. I mean, let's not get all esoteric here. Whatever happens to us when we die, everyone has their own opinion. But I've spent my whole life really kind of looking at this from a logical perspective. I just want to know the answers. I want to know what happens. I want to know what the point is. I want to know how it all works together. And one of the things that I've come to the conclusion of is that one of the first basic laws of physics is matter is never created or ever destroyed. It just changes form. In that essence, that makes us alive. That essence that makes us human. We're just a bag of bones, different chemical structures put together in a certain way with all these little working ecosystems inside of one another, one inside of the other, inside of the other, that all work together in this beautiful harmony. Life itself is quite incredible. But what literally makes us alive? What makes us cognizant? What makes us able to have self-awareness? And they've been trying to crack that for a long time, because that is going to be this next step in robotics. Once a robot has self-awareness, I don't think that that is too far out in the distant future, as we are mimicking the human brain and this deep learning, and now we have hive learning. So they could start learning at an exponential rate. A million robots, it takes a millionth of the time to learn a new skill. This whole new world will be about capturing that essence, controlling that essence, owning that essence that makes us alive. And think about it. all it's going to take, once they get all that set up and figure out how to copy neural patterns and what all the chemical composition and neuronal mapping, brain scanning, memory uploading. Once they've gotten that all figured out, it should be nothing to be able to imprint that at a moment's notice onto a physical entity. And like I've joked before, downloading in at Christmas. Anyway, I've rambled. All right, in their latest experiments, the Google researchers tested three different scenarios. The first involved robots learning motor skills directly from trial and error practice. And each robot started with a copy of a neural net. That's what I said, started with a copy of a neural net. That's what they're talking about doing to people as well. As it attempted to open a door over and over and at irregular intervals, the robot sent data about the performance to a central server, which used the data to build a new neural network that better captured how action and success were related. So it was literally learning. The server then sent the updated neural net back to the robots. And given that this updated network is a bit better at estimating the true value of action in the real world, these robots will produce better behavior. Guys, it's all about control. It's why the Brain Project, another White House initiative, is such a big deal. You know, Obama has headlined all of these disruptive technologies. If there's any legacy that this lunatic is leaving for us, it is the future technologies that are going to steal our humanity away. He's accelerated it 1,000,000,000-fold. In this second scenario, researchers wanted robots to learn how to interact with objects, not only through trial and error, but also by creating internal models of the object, the environment, and their behaviors. And just as with the door opening task, each robot started with its own copy of a neural network as it played with a variety of household objects, and the robots then shared their experiences with each other and together built what the researchers describe as a single predictive model that gives them an implicit understanding of the physics involved in interacting with the objects. Now, that's insane. They all play together. They all share their results from the experimentation. And they are able to come to a single predictive model conclusion. That's utilizing higher reasoning. You could probably build the same predictive model by using a single robot, but sharing these combined experiences of many robots gets you there much faster. Finally, the third scenario involves robots learning skills with help from humans. The idea is that people have a lot of intuition about their interactions with objects in the world, and that by assisting robots with manipulation skills, we could easily transfer some of this intuition to robots to let them learn those skills faster. And in an experiment, and don't forget, guys, all of our interaction online is also being monitored and surveilled. And there are projects going on where universities and psychology departments and all these different entities that want to crack socialization, human interaction, patterns that we have to be able to come up with predictive models. Pre-crime would be one of the ways that they could use that. But they're utilizing social media, our reactions to experiments when they drop an article or something onto a tool such as Facebook to see whether or not everyone jumps on it or people get upset or whatever. They're using all of these interactions with the machine to teach the machine. Next, the robots performed a series of trial and error repetitions that were gradually more difficult, helping to improve the network. And the combination of human guidance with trial and error learning allowed the robots to collectively learn the skills of door opening in just a couple hours. And what is just so unbelievable about this is that this is happening so quickly. And I'm going to tell you, every single time they come out and they say, don't worry about it, robots are not going to take all the jobs. We are not going to have legions of robots showing up to save you after a FEMA disaster. No, we're just building robots right now to, whoops, hold on 1 second. We are building robots right now to not only work in the battlefield, but also, we saw a story a couple weeks back. They have a challenge, a grand challenge right now that's going to be for building robots to go help kick off the first Mars mission, to be able to build structures, be able to build infrastructure, such as some sort of power generation station, to build living quarters and prepare the planet for the coming of the humans. But guys, this technology is going to be utilized not just for space. And that, of course, is, you know, the futuristic way that they use to get everyone to accept these robots. But these robots are going to be utilized in our fire departments, in our police departments, in our warfare fighting, not only on the battlefield, but in the air. And this stuff is going to be let loose. And we've had all of these tech titans come out and warn that artificial intelligence is a big danger. But remember, it's not just about tin can robots with artificial intelligence. It's artificial intelligence that's been released on the internet. And it will be released onto the internet of everything. It's going to control everything we do. It will be in charge of making sure that our world is working within parameters. I don't know. I babbled a lot here, but we're going to see in a second if I can manage to not screw up the show by connecting to Skype. I don't know. I'm leery to do it while the show is starting, just because at times it causes everything to lock up. Here I am. I talked about Charlie Rose, Mr. CFR, doing a guest hosting a 60 Minutes last week in regards to artificial intelligence, positioned to be a game changer. And just like they did a couple weeks ago when they made all the big announcements, we got $19.5 billion for going to Mars, and we had this new executive order to protect us from space weather. Remember, it's got to get into the psyche. Now we have National Geographic. It's going to have a big special in November telling us that Mars is our destiny. They're going to roll that out and make everyone believe that it is true. Well, now we have Charlie Rose coming out, just as Obama, and we're going to look at this tomorrow. He was at some conference on artificial intelligence that was hosted by the University of Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon University, two places where they're doing a lot of research on this. And Obama laid out a federal groundwork for the future of AI. We found out a while ago that they had already announced back at the beginning of this year that there was some sort of committee to be warning businesses in this country how disruptive this technology is going to be. But don't worry about it. We got universal basic income. When the robots take all the jobs, they'll be feeding us grapes. We're going to have home robots that take care of you and read stories to your kids. And it'll be the land of plenty. You won't need to work anymore. You can sit around and be pretty and think and philosophize. Well, it's not going to turn out that way. So anyway, let's see. I think I'm connected. Let's see if we can get Charlie for a few minutes here to start talking about AI and set the stage for tomorrow.
To improve and eventually perfect artificial intelligence is driving the research labs of some of the most advanced and best-known American corporations. They're investing billions of dollars and many of their best scientific minds in pursuit of that goal. All that money and manpower has begun to pay off. In the past few years, artificial intelligence, or AI, has taken a big leap, making important strides in areas like medicine and military technology. What was once in the realm of science fiction has become day-to-day reality.
Ding. All I'm going to say is, Charlie is the mouthpiece, and I've been telling you guys this for a long time, and despite the articles that we have read over and over again where they said, don't worry about it, no, you crazy people, artificial intelligence hasn't reached that level yet where there's a danger. It's going to be 100 years from now. Charlie's coming out and telling you, no, we've made huge strides, and remember, it's that law of exponential returns. But once technology starts teaching technology, and once technology starts evolving and learning on its own, and now we got swarm learning, we have a big problem, Clyde. And it's not just going to be on the planet. It's not just going to be on the internet. It's not just going to be in outer space. It's going to be in our bodies as well. I mean, this is really the apocalypse of the human race. When a more intelligent species comes into contact with a less intelligent species, or advanced species, let's say, what typically happens is that they are slaughtered or enslaved. And Elon Musk had kind of quipped that at some point in the future, we are going to be pets of artificial intelligence. And I would have to tend to agree with him.
You'll find AI routinely in your smartphone, in your car, in your household appliances. And it is on the verge of changing everything.
Ding.
It was for decades primitive technology, but it now has abilities we never expected. It can learn through experience, much the way humans do, and it won't be long before machines, like their human creators, begin thinking for themselves, creatively, independently with judgment, sometimes better judgment than humans have. The technology is so promising that IBM has staked its 105-year reputation on its version of artificial intelligence called Watson, one of the most sophisticated computing systems ever built.
Oh, that just gave me chills on my arms. All right, guys, well, I think we're going to leave it at that for now because we are just about at the end of the show, if you can even believe it. We're going to kick off here again tomorrow and continue on because there's a lot of different connecting points here that I have gotten behind on, and we'll bring it all back around. All right, guys, have an awesome Wednesday. Ms. Lonnie Clark is live up next, and I will catch up with you tomorrow. Everybody take care.
If I need you, just call me back.
This is Ozzy's.